Welcome to the Matt Haycock Show, a podcast about business, money, and life. Matt has been making money and making mistakes for over 20 years. And in this podcast, he shares his thoughts and stories so you can improve your business, finances, and life, whilst hopefully avoiding the mistakes he and others have made along the way. Listen in and level up.
I feel like it's important when you've got a community around you when you're launching a product to really get those people behind you, and then they will use word of mouth marketing to spread the word about your amazing product.
Hey guys, it's Matt Haycock here, and welcome to another episode of the Matt Haycock Show. And today I've got with me a guest who has had a whirlwind last few years. Just literally 3 years ago, she was traveling around Australia doing manual labor on a cow farm. I mean, this is the first time I've been able to say this in an introduction before. Apparently she was doing it not out of passion, but to obtain a second year visa to continue living in Australia. During this time, she discovers she is intolerant to dairy. And doesn't know how she's going to deal with it long term, because she doesn't like the dairy-free products that are on offer at the time. And like so many great business ideas that are born from, solving the problem of the original founder, Camilla Ainsworth has come up with Milk Plus, which has gone from an idea to a best-selling dairy-free product, and now in three flavours, I have been told. I'm about to try my first flavour very soon. During this time, she's also been a candidate on The Apprentice, and we've got so much stuff to talk about regarding mentorship, starting a business, growing a business, mental health, life during Corona, and dealing with trolls, amongst other issues on social media. So, Camilla, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Good. Good. And I don't want to put you under any pressure, but just to contextualise this for the guys listening as well, we've had some very good banter before we came on here.
We have.
So don't be boring.
I know, yeah. Okay? We've used it all up though now. Can we joke repeat? Because we have had some crackers.
Okay, I'll act surprised.
Yeah, okay. But we've got two northerners here, so it should be all fine.
Good. Right. Tell me, how did you end up on a cow farm in Australia? I mean, why were you travelling? What was your plan? Were you entrepreneurial at the time?
Well, I think so. I'd been at University of Manchester doing a law degree, which was very out of character for me, because I basically just went through the list.
Because you're a criminal.
Basically, that's it. I'd watched too much Suits and thought it was going to be like that. Thought it was going to be very Criminal Minds-esque, and alas, it was not. So went to, obviously, law school, and it was just so devastatingly boring.
Did you finish the degree?
Of course. Okay. When I start something, I have to finish it. But absolutely smashed through the overdraft. Really did live the student lifestyle, not gonna lie. Finished it, but then was one of those students, the stereotypical students, you know, the ones, they finished uni and they're off to find themselves. Still searching.
I was going to say, still looking, clearly.
Still searching. So went to Australia again, was just like living the life again. It was.
But you'd literally just gone there because you didn't want to do law.
Yeah, it was basically to escape adulthood. That is like the honest truth. Obviously, I said to the parents, you know, I think it'll be really character building. I'll learn life skills. Really, I was just like, I'm just not ready to adult for the next year or so. So I ended up on the cow farm to stay in paradise for another year. No fruit farms would take me. I don't know why, because you can pick pineapples, like more exotic things than shoveling poo on a cow farm.
You clearly weren't fruity and exotic.
No, clearly not. Yeah. Like, these nails were not made for cow farms and shoveling poo, but it was very, very character building. And it's where obviously the concept of Milk Plus was born, so it holds a special place in the old heart.
And that's what, about 3 years ago when
yeah, 3 years. So I think I was 21.
So had you been entrepreneurial, or had you ever thought about a life in business prior to that?
So I used to sell eggs, homemade eggs. Oh my God, not my eggs. Disclaimer, chicken eggs. God, I was wondering where that was going from. Let's start again with that. So I used to sell
not chickens. A scalable business.
No, not at all. So I used to sell free range eggs to like my neighbours, and I did all the branding myself. It was like happy chickens lay happy eggs, so that was like the slogan. So I was doing that, and I'd always be heavily involved in like the tuck shop at school, and just like
charge. You and John are going to get on great.
Yeah. Oh, does he do that?
His backstory is that his dad used to pay him his pocket money in credit for the local cash and carry.
Oh, I like that.
So he had to spend it on tuck shop related stuff, and then go and sell them at school. And I think he got suspended or excluded
Friends, tuck shop friends. Yeah. I'll drop that in and seem like I'm doing my research. I'll be like, oh, I know that you used to do that, and then I'll get kudos even though it's from you. But yeah, so did a little bit of egg selling, and then what else did I do? I did business studies at school, but my teacher always said to me, because I'm not great with numbers, I'm very wordy, like the essays and things. That was my forte. So she said,
is there really three flavours of this then? Or?
Two and a half. Okay. Yeah, that one's like not really finished, but you can try. No, I'm joking. So yeah, like I've done like bits and bobs. My dad's like a serial entrepreneur. He's had loads of different projects, so that's been quite inspiring for me.
Has he been a mentor to you along the way?
Yeah, he has. I don't want to give him too much credit, but he loves it. He loves a motivational quote, does our Nealsworth. I've just got these weird names for all my family members. In fact,
well, that's because you live in Pleasantville.
Pleasantville, it's Pleasanton, but Pleasantville just sounds so much more highbrow, so we'll roll with it. So yeah, he has given me some nuggets of information that have obviously helped me along the way.
So let's go to knowing that you want to create this product. So mm-hmm. So what you've decided that, having tried other dairy-free alternatives, yep. They're not for you, and. I mean, was it going to be a business at that point, or were you thinking, I don't like what I'm eating at home, I just want to make myself something that works for me?
Yeah, so I think it started really authentically in that I was the customer looking for a product that didn't exist, because obviously this is a grab and go product, so it's not designed to be like drank from a big carton, shake to wake. I'm nervous for you trying.
I know.
It. I'm not looking. I'm just going to try and talk through it. And I just was looking at what was available, like Olpro and the other brands, and they were all just so lackluster. It smells delicious.
It smells like booze, actually.
I thought you said poo.
No, booze. It's like Bailey's.
Does it? Mm. Oh, say it louder for the people at the back. Everyone loves Bailey's.
This is Bailey's flavour number four. Yeah,
you can be a testimonial. So that's chocolate orange oat, which is like quite more thick than the other ones.
Nice.
Is it?
Nice.
Perfect, a bit louder.
We can cut that later. No, it's nice.
Good. Yeah, so I just couldn't find anything that didn't have just lackluster branding. And obviously it started off as a nut milk brand. Now we've pivoted to do oat milk because looking at the figures, oat milk sales are growing exponentially. But at the start...
So they're all oat milk?
So two of them are nuts based, okay. And this one's oat.
Okay, but you'll do both, as in you're not going to change.
No, it's all always going to be both. But I had so much more fun with nut puns, like obviously.
Always have more fun with nuts.
Always. So I am a self-confessed. I'm a nut milker. How weird does that sound?
A nutaholic.
Like, imagine introducing yourself on a night out. Like, what do you do for work? I'm like, I milk nuts, and they're just like. Okay, like expecting like nail technician or whatever. But yeah, the product itself was just devised out of a personal search. I've always been of the mindset, if something doesn't exist, then why not create it? And even if it exists, but not in the form that you think is best, like if you can improve on something, then go for it. And I've always been really passionate about products and how things look. So the aesthetic was really important for me. So I had the idea, and then came home from Australia after calling my mum and dad saying, I've got this amazing idea, I'm gonna, you know, milk nuts, blah blah blah. And I was just, when I get excited I talk really fast, like I'll like froth a bit, I get that excited. I'm like and I wish I hadn't done that impression then, but we'll roll with it. Here we are.
I'm just imagining you milking nuts, like,
yeah, that's it again.
For people listening to the audio version of this and not watching the video
I'm
version.
Scared, yeah. Oh, God. But So my mum and dad were like, first and foremost, like, how do you milk a nut? Obviously, because it's kind of like a new craze, really, of like milk alternatives, veganism, plant-based. So I knew that it was a lucrative market. It was just how I got the idea into the reality, which was the difficult thing. But I think at the start, I just used to make the product for myself, which I think is like the best place for a company to start when you are genuinely an advocate of what you selling. Like, there's no like, I want to do this because I want to make money. Like, for me, it was, I want to make this because there's something that doesn't exist and tick the boxes.
So I've had a few guests on the show who have products. I mean, two that particularly spring to mind are Biotiful, I think they're called. The Kefir, Biotiful,
yeah.
Kefir. I forget what the brand's called, but the smoked hummus. What was the smoked hummus lady called?
She had some good puns about her brand as well, didn't she?
Oh, really? Yeah. Pun off, because I am fluent in nut puns. I'm a walking, talking nut pun. Oat puns aren't as fun, really. Like, I've not had as much fun with that. But smoked hummus.
Yeah, she did smoked hummus and variants on smoked hummus. But there is a reason for this.
You'd never even think to smoke hummus, would you?
I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. But
she did.
Go on.
She did.
Go on.
So can I carry on with my flow?
Yeah, thank you. Permission granted. It's not my podcast.
I'm trying to set the scene.
Okay.
So, couple of guests who've created products which have both, well, have either been out of a need for themselves, or a desire, or certainly kind of, you know, created in their kitchen at the time. Yeah. And I think there's many, you know, both listeners and just people out there in general who've got a desire and an ability to create some kind of food-based product, you know, probably from the house. Yeah. But it's, I guess, what often puts people off and what are some of the big barriers to entry. You know, how do you get that product stocked? How do you create it in the first place with all the, you know, with all the right rules and regulations and packaging and stuff? I mean, can we have a bit of a crash course for our viewers and listeners of how you can create something in your kitchen and see it in the shelves of Waitrose?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or wherever you are.
Yeah, Holland and Barrett we are. So,
very posh.
Have you got
one in Blackburn?
We have. Oh, really? Of course. You're making it sound like Blackburn's, like Costa del Blackburn's where it's at. Book your next holiday, people, to there. So for me, I had the same questions and no one was really there to answer them. It was kind of just like, just try and see what you can do.
I've spilt this all over my notes.
Oh, no use crying over spilt milk, though. We'll move on. That was good. sorry, I just laughed at my own joke very visibly.
Somebody had to.
Yeah, someone did. You did a polite laugh. It was a pity laugh. I felt it. So the product itself, obviously, with all products, I don't think it has to be perfect to start. And I would say that is some of the
perfection
advice.
Prevents opportunity.
Absolutely.
Has been posted on Mr. Haycox's Instagram account more than once.
I enjoy that profusely. And I genuinely believe it. Like, my product was probably like 50%. Like, it's a miracle, the first edition.
When do you think it'll be 100?
Oh, it's 100 now. Well, nothing's ever 100, can you? Perfection doesn't quite exist, especially for me. I always think it can be better, but let's say 99.8. But when I first launched it, it's a miracle nobody died, genuinely. Because my sister's got a nut allergy, and I was there in the family kitchen experimenting with all these nut things. Me and my sister don't really get on either, so. So it's like the ultimate...
I'm not surprised,
no,
I'm sounds like
joking.
Motive.
I know, yeah. I'm only joking, disclaimer. And yeah, it was just a case of experimenting with different packaging. And as soon as you've got an Instagram account, I feel like you can sell something these days. Like, you don't need expensive platforms.
But are you able to sell something like this? I don't know the answer. I'm not just framing the question. I don't know the answer. But I mean, are you able to sell, you know, like a food-based product without going through permissions and tests and regulatory type stuff?
So at the start, you just have someone from the council come round. But when you're a complete startup, the first like few months, you can just sell it. And that's what I did. Like, you just got to do it. Like, sometimes, like, fuck the rules a little bit, because you've got to start and then develop and evolve as you go, get the council there, because a big element of people buying your product is that you have got your 5-star hygiene, so that trust element. But then from that, once you've got your audience, I think it's important when you start a business and you've got a product that you test the market first. So if you can do that relatively low cost.
How were you testing? Was this a friends and family type thing?
Yeah. So friends and family, minus the sister, obs. And I was delivering it as the local milkmaid in my little milkmobile. Got a little number plate which said M7. Oh, yeah, I'll say my number plate. I'm not bothered. M7.
Well, I've told everyone where you live.
I know, yeah, great. My coordinates.
I won't tell them where you're staying tonight.
No, please don't. Oh, very funny. Police cut. Is this an interval? So, yeah, I got like a number plate on the mini. So it was like all like decaled up. So that's free marketing pretty much, and was delivering it and like created a bit of a stir in the local area, because I feel like it's important when you've got a community around you when you're launching a product to really kind of get into those people, get those people behind you, and then they will use word of mouth marketing to spread the word about your amazing product. Because I think, feel like a lot of people, they're like, they launch a product and they instantly want it like everywhere else. It's like conquer your backyard before you go elsewhere, is some advice I would give to people starting a product business as well.
And I know we're going to go on to talk about The Apprentice in a minute, but I presume at the time you started to market this, started to go on social, you won't have had the kind of following you've got now,
yeah,
and you're
no.
starting effectively from scratch.
Yeah.
What kind of techniques, tactics did you use to build your following on social and get the product?
Yeah.
Does the product have its own social?
Yes, yeah. The product social is paramount to sales, which I've tried to work on recently, because obviously you don't ever want to be reliant on just one source. Obviously we've got like more of a strategy now, but at the start it was just all social media, and you've got to think to yourself, like, what if Instagram goes down, what if Facebook goes down? You know, you can't sell, so you can't be reliant on that. But the socials of Milk Plus are very sassy, let's say.
You're probably the only person, I mean, I'm genuinely, I think you're probably the only person who's actually said those words. I mean, it's something I always talk about.
Yeah.
And normally I kind of get the almost like the exact opposite, not reaction, but like methodology from, you know, from so many influencers or celebs, or, you know, people who've got strong profiles, predominantly on Insta, you know,
Insta's
normally where they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can talk to them till you're blue in the face about other platforms, and they're just not interested.
No.
And they want to, you know, double down, triple down on Insta, and no one seems to, you know, understand the very simple concept that, like I said, you don't own your data.
No.
And the Insta could go down tomorrow. I mean, everyone's probably experienced little, what's the word? Let's say minor outages on Insta where you can't you can't do a like, or it's down.
You've probably been liking too many pictures, though. That's what they do. Shadow ban. You've been snaking.
I wasn't actually talking. Listen, you were moaning about me not following you earlier, right?
Oh, here we go. Shots fired. We're just warming up. 1-1.
But yeah, little minor outages here and there, and you can see people like tweeting about, has anyone noticed Insta's down, or has anyone noticed you can't post on Facebook? And that's for 30 seconds. If these people had, you know, a week down or a disabled account or whatever it may be, they don't seem to realize that that's a whole business just gone. And, you know, I could give one piece of advice, just one, you know, to anyone on social.
Yeah.
Who's strong on any platform, is that you've got to use that platform to start moving your viewers onto the other platforms. If you're strong on Insta, great, and if you prefer Insta, great, but use it to then move people to Facebook to Twitter to to LinkedIn or whatever it may be, and then ideally, ultimately, get them onto your mailing list somehow, because that is the only data that you're ever going to own.
One of my friends, actually, he uses Instagram for selling. Like, he's a huge Amazon, I don't want to say tycoon, that's like a bit of a title for him, but he's very, very powerful in the Amazon space, and he uses Instagram to like get new clients and things. And he got banned from Instagram for no reason. Like, we couldn't get in contact with anyone because I was trying to help him, because Instagram are smart. They don't have any offices.
Oh, the customer service on all those is horrendous.
Yeah, it's dog shit. And just trying to...
We've got a quote there, haven't we?
Yeah,
Camilla says,
it's
customer
dog
service
shit.
Is dog
yeah,
shit
there we are.
Instagram.
2 out of 5 would not recommend to a friend. But yeah, we were just trying to call, like, there's just no one, and just, you know, it's a smart model. They don't want to deal with your complaints, and no one, you never get through to anyone. But obviously he's had to start a new one. He's had to start from scratch.
Yeah.
So if he had a Facebook profile, he could kind of pivot to that. You've got a backup, but he's starting from completely nothing. He's got like 3 followers. Poor boy.
One of them is you.
Yeah, exactly. All of my accounts. Yeah, I've got loads of accounts. The goats have got their own account. I know that's going to upset you because you don't like
I won't be following that.
No, the goatgram_.
So, moving on from goats.
Yeah.
At what point is the business at when you go on to The Apprentice? You know, why did you decide to go on? Was it for the business or was it for you?
Yeah, no, it's definitely for the business. So, I'd been doing Milk Plus, I think, so I was working full time. I was a property manager at the time.
Well, like an estate agent or something.
Basically, yeah, the houses were not too cute. Like, it was like very low ceilings.
I know, Blackburn, yeah.
Very low ceilings, and I'd have to be in and be like, as you can see, lovely, airy, high ceilings, lots of natural light. It was like a dungeon. But, you know, you've got to be able to sell things. And I think that really helped me on The Apprentice, actually. The business had been going 5 months, I think. So we were very early on when I applied for the show. And I knew that. I just recognized that it was a platform. I knew that we were at a stage. We were getting regular orders every week. So I was doing like 300 milks a week. And that was the maximum that I could really do myself.
I was going to say, I know we're slightly backtracking, but where were you being produced and stuff at this time?
I was still doing it at home. So
bottling it.
So the product wasn't in this form at the moment. So it was in cartons, and that's what I needed the investment for. So we were in like cardboard cartons that had a shelf life of like 4 days if we were lucky. Like, we don't get a lot of sun in the UK, luckily, in this case. But if people would like leave them outside and not go to them for like a few hours, they'd be fizzy. And I'd get like Karen messaging me saying, is it supposed to be fizzy? And I'd be like, yes, of course. Because you can't afford to give refunds when you're a startup. Obviously now we do. But it was all, yeah.
Mine's a bit fizzy.
I know, don't say that. No refund for you, Glen Coco. What was I saying? God.
I was asking how the product has been made. Yeah. Try and concentrate, please.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, my mind was just elsewhere. There we are. So we're back. We had a shelf life of 5 days, which obviously is not commercially viable for being sold in Waitrose, Holland & Barrett. They're not going to touch a product like that. And in order to get it to retail ready, which it is now, I needed investment and I needed capital. So went on the show because I'm a super fan of the show, obviously. I've watched it since I was probably 10.
Oh, genuinely?
Genuinely. I love it. I think it's amazing. It obviously is quite cheesy, but who doesn't love a bit of cheese? So went on it.
People who are dairy intolerant.
Yeah, true. Yeah, got me there. Very quick from you today. Someone's had the Weetabix this morning. You never think that you're going to get on a show like this. I was always a bit like, oh, I'll go for it and see, because that's what I've always had the mindset of. If you're not in it, you can't win it. So went for the auditions, and there was like 5 different rounds, and eventually got the call to say that I was going to be on the actual show, which was crazy. 5 months I'd only been going. So I knew I'd be one of the...
You'd only been asked 5 months?
When I got on the show. And then obviously it takes a while for you to, you know, prepare to go on the show. So I'd probably been going like 7 months or something by the time I went into The Apprentice house, which is very, very, you know, a very, very short amount of time. And it meant that quite a lot of people, once they ask you like how long you've been going, they're a bit like, oh, okay, they write you off, which I was fine with, quite like being an underdog. It was that in age, because I was 22 at the time. So they'd ask my age, 22, they'd be like, oh no. And then how long have you been going? Like 7 months. So
And did you find the experience, I mean, obviously it was fun, and you know, you'd been a fan of the show, but did you find it genuinely educational to your business knowledge?
To my business, like, making donuts at 3 a.m. is not like benefiting my business acumen. It's just giving me wrinkles and high cholesterol, because I would just eat them all. But I would say like it has given me some real profound lessons that I wouldn't have got from not going on the show.
Give me your best lesson.
So I would say like follow the money. That was always one that Lord Sugar used to say, like follow the money, where you're actually going to see like the bottom line. If it's a profits task, then follow the money. Being gregarious and getting on with people is what will ultimately help you and give you a catapult. If you get on with people, then, you know, that's a huge secret weapon. If you're someone that people don't really like to work with, then it's going to work against you in the long run. So, yeah.
Would you do it again?
Yeah, definitely. I found it amazing. I thought it was really, really enjoyable. And the people were very sound, actually. I thought they were all going to be knobs, pardon my French, sosmum. But yeah, you do look at the show and you think, oh God, what a bunch of knobs. But
do you get some really catty, competitive people in there that are like properly playing like a game?
You know what used to annoy me the most?
Come on, I want some apprentice gossip.
Yeah, some goss, spill the tea. So you'd say something, because it's just authentic, you just say it, but the cameras wouldn't be on. Mm. And then someone, so you just have said a good idea, and then the cameras are rolling, and someone else says the idea that you've just said, but obviously the cameras weren't rolling, so it doesn't count, so then it's their idea. So that's very irritating.
But after it happened the first time, you should have learned to keep your mouth shut until the cameras were rolling.
True,
so you better get yourself to blame.
Yeah. But it's weird because you're just trying to be natural, having natural conversations. But it's very dog eat dog. Everyone wants credit all the time. But I'm good friends with all of ours. We're in a group chat still. Which is nice.
It doesn't say Camilla has left the group.
No, it doesn't. But no, we have had a few of that happen. Someone has left the group before.
Did they get back in?
I don't think anyone's let them back in. No. My year was very vanilla. Like, there was no drama. There was no relationships. Like, it was all very PG. The year after was spicy. It was very
spicy. Was Sabrina
spicy
in your year?
Sabrina was my year.
A friend of mine.
Yeah, but the year after me, it was like gossip galore, relationships. There was like arguments. Our year was very well behaved, I think.
So you didn't win.
No.
But
don't sugarcoat it. You didn't win.
No, because I have had the winner of that year's apprentice on this podcast. Yeah. I don't want to.
Yeah, I'll let you have it. Don't worry. There's a shovel. You didn't win. No.
But when you came out of there, straight back onto the business.
Absolutely.
But obviously by not winning you didn't get the investment, but what how did the business get taken forward from there?
So I knew because I knew that I'd been going 7 months, in the back of my head I was thinking, I want to get to final five, I want to get to the final, but if I don't win it won't be the end of the world, because for me it was all about having the control in your business to be able to make quick decisions, like reactive decisions. Like, I think that if I'd been Lord Sugar's business partner, I wouldn't have been able to have a product to sell in the final, which is where you've got 8 million people watching, and you've got a chance to make revenue to drive your business forward. So if I'd have been his business partner, I would have had to okay loads of decisions with his team, whereas I could just say, let's roll with it, and be really reactive and nimble to opportunities. So for me, the best thing, it sounds really cliche and everyone's like, I don't believe you, but genuinely,
the best thing was not winning.
I didn't want to win because I was 22. I was too young to have that almost life sentence of being his business partner. Me and him had very different, like, I respect him so much and we got on really well. But when you have to explain to a 75-year-old what the word sassy means, I don't think the partnership's meant to be. Like, sassy is at the very core of the brand. Like, sassy, like a bit tongue-in-cheek. It provokes a reaction. And when he's there, like, looking at things and he's like, throwing sass and nut puns around like confetti, like, he just was like, he wanted to, like, tone it down a bit. But I don't think that was the right decision, to tone down the branding, because that's what sells it, the tone of voice. So for me, you know, driving the business forward was...
I think that's an interesting point as well, that, you know, it's... It's very, very easy to see somebody who's super successful, you know, super wealthy, and achieved a lot. And then I think often people's, you know, perception is, we need to take everything they say as read, because they've achieved so much more than I've achieved. So I've got so much to learn from them. But I think you know, it's really about obviously understanding relevance, context. You know, taking the right things from the right people, and also understanding that the world, you know, today's world is very much different to, I mean, 10 years ago, certainly, never mind 30, 40, 50 years ago.
We, yeah.
We had a guest on here recently, like uber successful, you know, as in hundreds of millions, massive international brand. But when you kind of sit down to talk about some of the strategies and advice that they've got of how they built that brand, which were all, you know, groundbreaking strategies at the time, you couldn't apply any of that anymore
because it's just a completely different
world.
And it's not one size fits all. And that's why I think not every mentor or investor is the right fit for you. You've got to not just say yes to anyone. And I think that that's what's helped the brand grow.
And so do you have any mentors now?
So yeah, I've always been of the mindset, like, have as many mentors that you can, be a sponge with information and knowledge.
When you say you've always been of that mindset, when did you actually, you know, start thinking like
that? So like my dad, obviously I would consider him to be a mentor. And then like even just from like teachers and things, like I was always a bit of a swot at school, like always like trying
I guess what I mean by the question is, now you can talk about it and look back and say, you know, Mr. Smith, the geography teacher, was a mentor. But did you think that at the time? Because one of the things I, you know, talk about quite a lot at the moment is that I'm a total advocate for mentorship. But it was probably only the last 3 or 4 years that I really kind of understood it more formally. Yeah. And that if you ask me, if I look back over my career, I'll tell you, like, this person was a bit of a mentor, that person was a bit of a mentor. But, you know, never in my 20s or whatever did I actually say, yes, I need mentors. I will actively go and seek them, and they will, you know, they will help propel me forward.
Yeah. I mean, they've kind of come as a, obviously I've been looking back retrospectively with teachers and things, but like one of my mentors came as a result of a friendship. So once I considered him to be a mentor as well, then I was actively looking for other mentors, and that has helped massively, especially people in the same realm. So Julian Hearn, who's the Huel founder, after coming off The Apprentice, I was like, I need to like shadow and get speaking to people that are in the same realm. So like I'd consider him to be like a close friend now that we can bounce ideas off, because he's in the same market and they're doing exceptionally well. So I just think also like getting 10% from, you know, as many people as you can is going to give you a toolkit to be the best version.
And did you raise investment in the end, or did you not need to?
So didn't need to because of the apprentice final, because I worked super hard. So there's like 3 months in a break in filming between when the product, not the product, when the series is filmed and when it's shown on TV. So I had 3 months to take the product from the cardboard carton to retail ready with a shelf life of 6 months. So I was like super busy doing that, but I knew that if I didn't have a product to sell on the final, then I wouldn't be able to make any money. So we sold loads of product on the final, which helped to finance the project going forward.
Okay.
People always ask me, like, do you have any regrets about doing that? Because obviously when The Apprentice was on TV as well, I was still working on the product, trying to make it ready for the final. And I didn't really have chance to go out and socialize and things and enjoy like being on TV, because I was just so busy working, trying to get it ready to be sold for the final. And I definitely don't regret it, because that's what's allowed me to create the other two flavors.
And we're recording today in October 2020, obviously, you know, very much, you know, in the middle, I say in the middle, hopefully at the back end of Corona, COVID, lockdown, etc. I mean, how have you been impacted as a business?
Yeah, so we were predominantly sold in Holland and Barrett. So we sold in 645 stores.
And, all the shops.
Yeah, and obviously the shit show that is Corona came along, and we had to pivot our business model to be predominantly online. So luckily, I'd been pursuing Amazon for a while before the lockdown and whispers of Corona. So I'd already had that in the pipelines, because again, I just don't think you should ever rely on one source, especially the high street, because it's just been volatile for ages ever since Woolworth went RIP. I've just been like, I need to be careful not putting all my eggs in one basket.
And presumably you don't have a contract with Holland and Barrett. No. That you're only as good as last week's order.
Exactly, yeah. So was pursuing Amazon and then some other online retailers, so like Muscle Food, Skinny Food Co., which, you know, was good for us because obviously people were ordering online and they wanted it delivered to the door. But it did have a big impact the first few weeks because no one was going into stores. The footfall was diabolical. It was just a ghost town. But obviously we had the new flavour as well that I wanted to launch at the start. It was supposed to launch in March, but no one wants to hear about chocolate orange oat milk when there's, you know, coronavirus going on. So it was very difficult to battle with when's the right time to launch. And like people will say to me, like, I'm surprised that you've even launched it now. But it just got to the point when is the time going to be right?
And what's your staff structure? I mean, do you have staff? Do you outsource? Did you have an office?
Yeah, so we keep things super lean. I've always been really keen on that. So
just you and Vincent?
Me and Vincent Van Gogh. So I've got one girl who handles kind of like collaborations because we do some influencer marketing and she kind of deals with like some social media stuff as well. But I still do all the social media for Milk Plus because I just feel like it's my tone of voice.
Sure.
And it has to be the personality.
It's a blessing and a curse probably, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. More of the blessing, let's say 70-30. I'm not saying that my hun hasn't got loads of personality, but I just feel like so often founders are so keen to like delegate the most important tasks. So I've got her, and then we outsource the product now. So it's to my exact flavor specifications,
okay.
But we've got a factory making it on scale. So I'm not, when I get an order, I'm not like, oh, got to go and milk like 7 oat flakes to make that order. Now it's all outsourced, which is great.
And I guess, again, for people watching and listening, just so they can understand if they've got a product to make. So you literally effectively have a contract with an outsourced kitchen that you
yeah.
give a product spec to.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this many
yeah.
nuts, this flavor, this whatever.
Yeah.
And then they make to a minimum order. Do they do the packaging
and
everything?
They do all the packaging, yeah. I designed all of the logo, all of the branding, and it's all written by me. All my friends are like, just read a bottle. It just sounds like me speaking. And yeah, it's really difficult to find a production partner. Really, really difficult. I went through so many samples because the USP is the taste. Like, yes, it's the branding. Yes, it's the fun puns and how it stands out on a shelf, but it's got to taste good. Like, it can't taste like washing up liquid. And a lot of the samples did. And I even got some samples once and they were, so it was normal full fat milk flavored with almond. Bear in mind, this is supposed to be a dairy-free drink. And they just sent me some flavored milk with like a nut flavored, like full fat milk. I was just like, oh, because there's not many people in the UK that will actually touch nuts because they're contaminated because of allergies.
Right.
So for the first few products, I had to go overseas. This one's made in the UK because it's oats. But yeah, it's been I feel like I've aged 25 years since doing this. How old do you feel?
How old do I look?
Oh, don't. That is the worst question. How much do I weigh? Those are questions that should not be asked. No comment.
How old do I feel?
Yeah. I feel 90. Today.
I flip like some. I don't know, even when I'm not, I don't know. I probably say I feel like early 30s.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Most people say I feel, I still don't feel a day over 20.
No.
I feel haggard.
My rickety old body feels well over, feels well over 21. But
went off topic then, sorry.
yeah, I can't.
Sorry,
remember.
I threw a curveball.
No, I tell you, let's go back to Corona.
Okay.
We're talking about that you've got a lean team, so
yeah.
I guess there was no office in positions, etc.
No.
I mean, what's your more kind of general, you know, global view on the handling of Corona? Not so much the handling. I guess what I'm getting at is obviously you're a big advocate for mentors and mentorship, and
yeah.
You know, there's a lot talked about you know 18 to 30 year olds
yeah.
who really want to be in an office environment because it's a fantastic opportunity for them to sponge. And whilst they haven't had these opportunities, you know, it could very much be stifling, you know, UK growth, creativity,
yeah.
You know, fostering of these people. I mean, what's your views?
Yeah, I think that there's two sides to it because obviously I work from home, but I get my energy from other people, like going to business meetings, and you've not been able to do that. But I'm of the belief that you can be inspired from home, especially now that we've got like Zoom, we've got those resources. I just worry that at the moment, obviously businesses are really, really impacted. They're not really getting a lot of support, and it's not really a time that a lot of young people specifically are being encouraged to start things. There is people being very cautious. Whereas if you look at things, there's actually never been a better time to start an online business because everyone's at home. So it's all about just harbouring opportunity and presenting it to young people. I just don't think that it's being discussed enough at the minute. It's kind of like everything's being put on hold, which I don't think is the right thing at all. I think we need to crack on and continue to inspire. I know loads of people that have set up businesses over lockdown and they're thriving. So I think that messaging needs to be spread as much as the propaganda of, you know, everything's awful. Like the news is very scaremongering, I think. And it's putting off a lot of people and inhibiting a lot of young people's potential. God, I said that all in one breath. Let me just breathe.
Obviously, you've mentioned that you've got a lot of people, you know, who've set up successful businesses during lockdown. I guess kind of contextually right now, there's so many students stuck in halls of residence, or stuck at unis, not being able to either go to uni properly, go home, you know, a lot of negative feelings, a lot of negative vibes around it. I mean, what's your kind of thoughts and advice to these people about maybe, you know, turning this negativity on its head and, you know, using this time for them to be starting businesses or for them to be trying to further themselves in some way?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's being looked at in the wrong way. I feel like it's a huge opportunity now to actually start a business, especially an online business, because people are at home, people are a little bit wary. If you can create a product or some form of service business where you're actually, you know, acknowledging the situation and providing a solution. Like the biggest thing with businesses that do well are problem, solution. And I think instead of wallowing and thinking like things are shit, like, yeah, things are shit, but let's use the tools that are available. You've got Zoom, you've got Facebook ads, you can pretty much sell anything. You've got Instagram shops now, they've got a tool where you tap to shop, it costs you nothing. You've got loads of tools that you're at your disposal. And if you're at uni, you've got a library, you've got resources there, and you've got people with time that want to help you. So, you know, it's a great opportunity, I think, and we need to flip it round slightly.
Cool. Well, listen, I want to go off on a slightly different tack now, and I've read recently that you've talked about how you developed an eating disorder.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a recent thing? Was that something during lockdown?
I've always had like a binge eating tendency. I've just always been.
This is an eating disorder insofar as eating too much as opposed to
to like the feelings of being sick. Like the amount of food that I can eat is shocking. Like no one can ever believe like my McDonald's order. It's disgusting, genuinely, and expensive. It's expensive and disgusting. You know, when it was like McDonald's at the start of lockdown, well, they closed and then they reopened and they were like, oh, we'll reopen, but we've got a maximum spend of £25. To no one else was that a problem. I was like, oh dear. My friend was like, surely you're not worried about that. And I was like, I am. But I had it, well, it started, I think, from when I was at school at sixth form. I've always had school dinners when I was growing up, and then moved to sixth form and we had our own canteen and we had free range on what we could eat. And we had these amazing sixth form cookies that were huge, and it became like a bit of a competition as to like how many you could eat. And I'm very competitive by nature. So I could eat like six, which is disgusting. There's like probably 4,000 calories there in six cookies. But because I was doing lots of netball, all of those active things that kids do, I just never put on any weight. And then it became a running joke in that I became like a food hoover. In every caption where people would do me a happy birthday post, it would be like, happy birthday, Mills. Like, there's no one I'd rather eat the food off my plate. Like, you know, like it was always like a theme. I was like, oh, like all people have to say about me is that like, I eat a lot. And over lockdown,
I'm a big eater. We might get on after all.
Maybe the friendship is sound with you. Yeah. So yeah, I've just always loved food, and I'm a very extreme person. I won't just have like one biscuit. I will have the whole packet. And I think you're a psychopath if you can eat one half of like a Kit Kat finger. Like my dad, we'll go on like a long bike ride, and he'll like a 4-hour bike ride, and he'll pack two Jelly Babies two, and not even black ones. And I'm just like, what a freak. What a complete freak. So, like, I just can't get my head around it. But obviously, here I am. So I'd rather be him because I just can't stop eating.
But and what's your issue? I mean, does your weight yo-yo? Do you put it on then stop eating jelly babies and lose it? And...
yeah, so... I just put on, so after The Apprentice, that was a very stressful experience. So I feel like that triggered me quite a lot. Like I'd come home from a task and me and Sean, the winner,
spoke to her before I spoke to you.
Fabulous. just so you know, you didn't win. Me and her would like shovel spoonfuls of Nutella in our mouth, like just literally from the jar after a task. And it was all very funny until like you're there at like 12 o'clock at night, like trying to avoid people and secret shoveling Nutella into your mouth. And then you're like, what am I doing? So I put on like a stone since leaving The Apprentice. And then I put on like another stone. Before you know it, like I've eaten my former self. So it's like it became a bit of an issue when I realised that I wasn't losing the weight that I used to. So I was eating these excess calories and it's affecting my health really because it's not healthy to yo-yo at all. And with lockdown, obviously, there wasn't very much to do. Although I was still working throughout lockdown, I had a lot more time to be at home with, you know, near the kitchen, near the fridge. And yeah, things just went spiraled out of control, especially at the start. And it's so easy to talk about issues. This is my problem at the minute, that I feel like people need to be more authentic. It's so easy to talk about issues in hindsight. Like now I've got like methods and coping mechanisms that help me deal with binge eating, but I can only talk about it now that I've got these like systems in place, which I feel like we need to start talking about it more when you're in it.
And what are some of these systems for you? What's...
to help. So yeah. I will, if I'm going out to a restaurant, because restaurants used to be really bad, like I just order loads.
I mean, I order like literally, I'm a sharer and a feeder. I order like seven starters.
Same,
and three. If the two of us were having lunch, literally it would be seven starters, three main courses.
Same, that's
and like I always used to say, I've not had a good lunch until I've had to undo my trousers.
Absolutely, that's why I wear,
it's nothing to do with the food.
Yeah, I wear dresses for that very purpose, stretchy ones at that, like these, sometimes I'll wear these pants as a strategic measure so that I don't order too much food.
When you start squeaking, you know.
I know, yeah, I'm trying to keep really still. I've not been this still in ages, genuinely. Let me just do a wriggle. No one ever used to want to split the bill as well, you know, because if one of them eats loads of food and then they're like, let's just split it, I'd always be like, right, I'll pay for mine because I've had so much more. But now I'll choose my food that I'm going to have for the restaurant beforehand.
Okay.
So that I'm not impulsive and on the spot, like, just like, I'll just have whatever. I'll also like do like on Sunday, I'll like plan out like some meal ideas for the week ahead. Cause
you cook for yourself a lot.
No, that's the problem. I can't cook. Like beans on toast, you like that? Because that's my delicacy.
You've got carbs, I'm fine.
True, I cook a mean bowl of porridge and scrambled egg. I'm very good
at. With milk plus.
Of course, nothing else. We're not blasphemous here. so just like failure to prepare is preparing to fail, basically. If you're hungry, you've got a fridge in front of you, you're going to eat rubbish. And just not... basically writing off a day if you've had one treat, because that's what I used to do, eat some shit on Wednesday and then I'd be like, well, I may as well eat shit for the rest of the week till Monday, and then by that time, you know, you've spiraled out of control more. But you've got to stop viewing things as like good calories and bad calories. Ultimately, that everything is just a calorie, and that's what I try not to do now, like be like, oh, that's a cheat meal. But yeah, it's been difficult because obviously no one wants to put on weight, really, because I was at a really healthy weight and used to do triathlons. And now whenever I train, I find the training so much harder because I'm like a stone and a half heavier. So I think for me...
So you're trying to lose weight now, are you?
I'm just trying to be at a level where I feel healthy again, because I know that my eating, like on Instagram, it looks like I've got my shit together. People always say this. It's like people think that you've got your shit together until they get to know you. And I'm like, yeah, guilty. So on Instagram, it looks like I eat really healthy probably, but I still have big binges at the weekend. So I just want to get to a point where I'm not doing that, where I'm not like exercising 5 days a week, but because I'm eating 4,000 calories at the weekend, doesn't count. So it's just finding a bit of a happy medium, I think, for me.
And we were talking just before we started recording about social media and about, you know, a lot of negative comments and trolling and stuff that you get. I mean, is that related in any way to the eating disorder side of things, or is that just, I guess, because you're a public face?
Oh, I hate
most
that.
Famous like, girl in Blackburn.
That does not take much doing, does it? Goodness me. I'd say I'm a Z-list. No, maybe like a U. I'll say, give myself U status. So I would say that it's pretty unrelated, because I've always been a big, big eater, and I don't believe in like stress. I hate the word stress. Like, I'm stressed. I feel like people use it all the time, like stress eating. But I'm very thick skinned. I think you have to be, like, coming out of a TV show. You just don't ever realise how many people have an opinion on everything that you do. Like, recently there was a comment that someone had said, and it was on Twitter, and this was from Heather. Shout out to Heather. And I'd put something on, and she was like, yeah, outfit looks great, but you're starting to look a bit like a Russian shot putter. And I was just like, what the hell, like a Russian shot putter? And then I was like, well, maybe that's a compliment. Made the mistake of Googling it. I was like, oh my God. But luckily I can laugh about that, and that didn't like trigger my eating or anything. I could just laugh it off. But you do get like the people that like just say like disgusting things, mainly, well, 90% men, like just being really pervy. I couldn't believe it after the show, like the amount of weirdos there are in the DMs.
Do you get the aubergine emoji?
All the time, yeah. This is a top tip. If you are seeing someone and you look at their recently used emojis and they have the aubergine emoji in there, do not text back. Do not text, or the snake emoji, actually, both, either of those.
I never knew the snake one.
Did you not? You're there, like, quickly use some emojis so no one will look. Guilty. But yeah, my block list, I'm just very precious on what I use my energy on. Like, I used to reply to people and be like, how nasty. And then now I'm just like, block. Like, if it's not serving you, just block.
I mean, I guess the reply effectively gives them fuel and almost not validation. But, you know, something I talk about, you know, quite a lot. I was telling you about my lives I was doing at the beginning of lockdown. And we used to, you know, get quite a few trolls on there. A lot of people talking, asking questions. And the advice I always used to give people, I always used to kind of caveat it by saying, look, I know this almost like sounds over simple. So, but you know, for me, the only thing you can do is just ignore/laugh/not give a fuck. Because what you've just got to think, this person, their life is so dog shit that the best thing they've got to do today is to come on your page and give you attention. Okay, it might be negative attention, but you know, they've got nothing better to do than to tell you you're a Russian shot putter.
Yeah, exactly. But I've never been given like shit as in like someone saying about my appearance or anything like that. It's all just like weird pedos, like weird pervs, like sending me like
pedos. I think you're trying to think you're younger than you
pedos,
are, aren't you?
Sorry. Pervs. Yeah.
Hell.
Pervs. I get confused with my peas. Just weird.
Well, that's because you put
comments.
The wrong age on your Instagram.
Probably. Oh, now you've told my that secret as well. That's another one. I'm coming across very dishonest, I feel. But I just block and don't give them your energy, because energy is currency, without going all like voo voo. Like crystals and all of those things we were talking about before. But I've got very thick skin. The only thing that worries me is like other people who receive messages like that and they don't. So that's why I spoke out about it and gave examples of the types of things that I was being sent. The problem is, that's frustrating, is, you know, it's very difficult to get someone removed from Instagram. Like, I've had people that have been messaging me consistently for like 2.5 years now, like to every story, like sending photos, and I'll try and block them and report them to Instagram, but nothing ever happens. Their page never gets removed, even if multiple people do it. So I still don't understand how that works. But it's very concerning how there's so many faceless people on Instagram. I feel like there needs to be some kind of protocol wherein you need a passport photo to have an Instagram account, because it's too easy for people. Like, the amount of people, I could go on Instagram now and look at my stories, the amount of people without a profile picture is scary. Mm. And they, you know, they follow like 200, they have no followers, no posts. And I think that that's...
Sounds like you've been buying your followers to me.
Really? Is that what happens? Well, I just think it's like weirdos, yeah. Like people that want to like follow like weird girls. Not that I'm a weird girl, but they want to, well, you may say otherwise, that want to follow girls. Like, it's just bizarre.
And do you find, because I know we were talking again just a bit before we started recording, I mean, you're finding this isn't exclusive to Instagram. I mean, you now, I think you've had a dick pic on LinkedIn, have you?
Yeah, well, very close to that, very close. I feel like it's becoming very plenty of fish on there.
Stop following Lord Sugar.
I just feel like the wind's blowing like all the weirdos from Instagram to LinkedIn now. Like, luckily, like the majority of my followers, they're all people that want, my audience tends to be like business audience people. But again, like I say, when I go through, I try and block anyone that doesn't have a face. Like, if someone follows me that doesn't have a profile picture and has like a weird name, or like there was an account made Camilla Ainsworth's belly button. How weird. Like, and the profile picture was my actual belly button. Who is that? Like, who is that? I need to know. But my protocol now is, if someone follows me and they don't have a profile picture, they don't have any posts, then I'll just block them. Because I think I don't need the extra follower. Like, I'm not bothered. I used to have like 40 something thousand. And because I've blocked 600, obviously, like, I'm gone down, but it doesn't bother me that.
But would you use that same strategy on your business account?
No, because obviously...
You take what you can get on there.
Yeah, exactly. And luckily, the engagement's good on Milk Plus off the back of The Apprentice. It was already... I think we already had like a few thousand followers, but obviously The Apprentice helped that. But the problem is with the business one is a lot of the audience are the same. So it's trying to diversify, which is something that I'm working on at the minute on the strategy.
So what else does the future hold?
Ooh,
so what's news for you and what's going to be new for the brand?
Well, have you got any flavour suggestions? What did you say before?
Black cherry.
That's crap.
Why?
It is. I don't. No one likes black cherry.
Well, kefir do black
what's
cherry.
What's the problem with red cherries?
Let me
what's black cherry? I don't think I've ever had a black cherry.
Well, I don't think is I've really ever heard of a red cherry. I mean, I know red cherries exist, but when you have a flavour,
yeah,
it's like black cherry cheesecake.
Or maybe like forest fruits. That sounds quite nice. You're not getting any credit because I basically made it better.
That's too many fruit.
You can have an input there.
That's where you can't make a decision which fruit to put, so you think, fuck it, I'll just put all the fruits of the forest
fruits,
in there. Yeah.
So I've got, I think more new flavours will be on the horizon. We're definitely going to shift to have a...
How do you create a new flavour? I mean, do you ask your audience? Obviously, you've asked me and completely, you know, ignored my advice.
Yeah.
But do you ask your normal, your regular customers?
I'd usually ask more credible people.
Okay.
No, I'll ask my mum, dad and sister. No, I won't. Like, I tend to go, because the key thing with this is I don't have to second guess anything, because I'm the target consumer, which I think is great, because you obviously ask people's advice, but ultimately I am someone that would buy this product. So it makes it very easy to create flavours. So we're definitely going to stick with the oat line because it's a cheaper product to make. So obviously the margins are better. It's also easier to be made in the UK. It's thicker, it's healthier, and oat milk's on a huge growth trajectory. So you've got to follow the money, like Lord Sugar said, really. So I want to definitely look to expand the Amazon profile. We're doing well on Amazon at the moment, but I think it's definitely got scope for growth on there. And yeah, just spread the messaging more. I've got a few things lined up which are exciting with some retailers, but again, I don't tend to get too excited about retailers until it's over the line, because anything can change at any given moment. But I've started doing a little bit of consultancy as well on the side, which helps to keep my, like, the fire in my belly a little bit, just helping like young people set up businesses, which I'm very much enjoying.
Cool. Well, where can the guys at home follow you? Where can they buy the product? Give yourself a little shout out.
Okay.
I promise not to cut it.
Okay, so at Camilla Ainsworth is my Instagram, and then we've got at Milk Plus, spelled alternatively, of course, MylkPlus. And you can, the best place to get the product at the moment is probably Amazon or Skinny Food Co. or our website.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot for being here.
No problem. Thank you.
It's been fun to chat to you.
It has.
You've managed to maintain the same energy and banter from breakfast, so
good.
I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed listening or watching. If you've been watching, make sure you also listen and subscribe to the podcast over on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. If you listen to the audio version, we do all this kind of stuff on YouTube as well with loads more content, loads of other great guests like Camilla. So make sure you like. If you like, make sure you subscribe, and I look forward to seeing you again in a future episode.
Thank you for listening to The Matt Haycock Show. For more Matt, check out his YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Matt Haycock. Or go stalk him on Instagram and Twitter, The Matt Haycock. And we'll see you soon.